who is it that loves doing business with us? What are their needs? And how can we uniquely provide value to them?
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Ethan Martin. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Ethan. One, he is a serial entrepreneur who has started and sold multiple companies. Two, he and his team coach high-growth, mission-driven companies worldwide, and they focus on leadership teams and people. And the third fact, this one is a fun fact. He teaches entrepreneurs how to fly. No, really fly an airplane, and he lives in Colorado with his family. Ethan Martin, welcome to Your Intended Message.
George, thank you so much. It's great to be here. Really honored to be a guest on Your Intended Message. The work you're doing, helping great leaders to communicate, I think is now more important than ever as we're exiting this pandemic and seeing so many opportunities to grow, to serve, to make the world better as leaders. And yet people are probably more distracted than ever. And so communication, we're just seeing, is absolutely paramount.
Good. And you're right. Communication is paramount. And the work that you're doing, and I'm intrigued by your work focus, because you're working with CEOs and company leaders to improve their business, but you start from a place of being mission driven. What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, what we're seeing with our clients all over the world, George, is the importance of having a higher calling tied to your business. When there's, we call it a BHAG. This is from Jim Collins and the fantastic research that Jim has done from Good to Great and his other books, especially Beyond Entrepreneurship 2.0, which we absolutely love. Just so much wisdom in that book. As leaders, we have a calling. We have an opportunity to truly steward the lives of those people working for us. And what we see when we align our business to a higher calling, some big problem that may take most of our life to solve, if not even beyond our lives, it helps us to attract and retain the best talent. People, I think, are realizing out of this pandemic that life is short and who we choose to spend our time with is critically important. And so when, as leaders, we align ourselves to these higher calling, what's really on our heart, what we're really passionate about, it is amazing how that is really key to building a great business that will grow, that will be very profitable, that will really solve everything. But it all begins with having that kind of powerful mission tied to your company.
Now, Ethan, is there some correlation to what you just said and that old piece of advice of do what you love and the money will flow?
I would say so. And I think part of doing what you love in our case is we love people. I love seeing talent in people before they see it themselves and using our companies to really incubate that talent, to give them those challenges and opportunities to grow. And what we see too is we've all got different gifts. Every one of us, and that's one of the things we love working with our clients, is they'll have very diverse leadership teams. They're going to challenge each other. But it also means there are certain things that we're really wired to do and other things that we probably shouldn't be doing. And so if there's something that, you know, is part of our day-to-day routine, but it's taking up a lot of our energy, it's probably something we should delegate to someone else that's better wired for it. And so it's really important as leaders that we not only really understand ourselves, but understand those gifts on our senior team so we can put them in roles where they'll be most impactful and really have the most fun.
So it goes beyond simply being in love with what you do. It sounds like there's some direction setting and prioritizing of what exactly you're going to do.
Yeah. It's one of the things we see with all of our clients is it's important to have a vision. And this is, you know, created with the CEO in collaboration with his or her leadership team. Really important to pick what mountain are we going to climb? Where do we want to be in about 10 years? Where do I want to be in 3 years? Because 3 years is this magical time frame, George, in terms of communication, being so, so clear. We'll oftentimes see in companies what we call this mid-mountain fog, where if the leadership team has this bold vision, but they haven't kind of chunked it into like a three-year time frame, that's real. Because in 3 years, we have 12 quarters to make all kinds of great investments in people and product and partnerships. All kinds of things can happen. But it's also close enough in that it's real. We see a lot of companies struggle with things like a five-year wild-ass guess, where the CEO, the leadership team, the investors all know there's really not a lot tied to it. And it ends up being really stressful because no one's really sure how to get there or who they need to get there. So 3 years becomes absolutely magical for really focusing leadership teams around where they want to go.
Now, I'm hearing that it's better to have a three-year plan with specific quarters sectioned out versus creating this five-year or 10-year plan.
Yeah. So what we find at the 10-year level, it's really important that we have something to align to. If the CEO has this big, bold vision, that in and of itself is going to help to attract top talent. Or if the CEO just wants to run a lifestyle business, that's totally fine too, but you're probably going to attract a very, very different caliber and type of leader, right? So it's really important to have that kind of 10-year BHAG for alignment. And it's far enough out that you can then make the appropriate investment decisions tied to it. But that's not enough. It is so key that the team literally map out, where do we want to be in 3 years? What is that going to look like in terms of the products and services that we offer? How many people do we have? Where are they located throughout the world? How many widgets are we selling? What's flowing through the company? And what we saw, especially during the pandemic, is if the team is really clear where they want to go, the next big question to focus on is who do they need to make that happen? And the question of how are we going to get there evolves over time. But if we fixate too much on how are we going to get there, it can be really stressful. And especially during the pandemic in 2020, we saw so many great teams that were committed to where they were going to be at the end of the year, where they were going to be at the end of 3 years, achieve those numbers and achieve those goals. Now, how they went about it was incredibly creative, and how they innovated was just so awesome to see. So the how might actually change. That's okay. It was that commitment, that clarity, that alignment amongst the senior team that was so key.
And I'm hearing, and this is resonating with me, I'm hearing that it's important to have a clear vision, which is the where we're going, yep. Which needs to be fairly, if not stable. It can't, so your vision can't change every year. You can't come up with a new vision every quarter or every year or every 2 years. However, the how you're going to get there definitely will change, and one needs to be flexible to change as long as we're still heading in that same direction, which must have, I imagine a lot of organizations must have struggled with that, not having a clear vision when the pandemic came along.
Yeah. And it was really, really stressful because many leaders were leading through a world that they had never led before. And one of the tools that we found, in addition to just great communication, I mean, the CEO is definitely the chief communication officer, but especially during the pandemic, you cannot over communicate too much. You may have said it all once perfectly, but your team's going to need to hear it so, so, so many times. And we've got great technology to be able to share videos, for example, with our team, which is so, so important if we can't all be together. But what we would see, George, is not only communicating that vision being so, so key, encouraging the entire leadership team to be experts in the market that they're serving and really understand what we call their core customer. This comes from fantastic research that Robert Bloom has done, ties to how Southwest has created this incredibly unique and valuable strategy, because it's all about being different and valuable in the market. And the only way to do that is to really understand our core customers. Who is it that loves doing business with us? What are their needs? And how can we uniquely provide value to them? And so during a pandemic, what we would see is for many of our clients, their core customers' needs might have shifted radically. But if we are really close, if we're helping them be really close to their core customers, they're going to tell us what their new needs are. How have things evolved? And look at all the tremendous innovation that happened during the pandemic. I've heard it said and definitely saw it. We saw about 10 years of innovation in that first 12 months of the pandemic. And the only way to navigate that is to be so close to our customers, because there may have been things that we were doing for 5 or 10 years that are no longer valuable to them. And we can give those activities up and focus on these new initiatives that truly are valuable to them.
Identify the core customer. That's got to be critical. And there are too many businesses, companies who think, who start their description of their customer with the word everybody. Everybody who needs. No, it's not your customer. And it's funny. And I thought you mentioned, you referred to Herb Kelleher's airline. And I remember from the book that when he started the company, his core customer were people who rode buses. That's who he was competing with. So he was competing on those short hops. He wasn't competing with traditional airline customers.
Exactly. And he not only had that vision and that grit and tenacity to make it happen, but yeah, he understood what was that white space in the market. And as this key shift of deregulation happened and they could grow beyond Texas, what do their core customers need? And not trying to be everything to everyone. Strategy is all about making choices, but we want to make sure the things that we pick are valuable to our core customers. And so Southwest is not offering a first class, is not offering, you know, at the time they weren't offering any international flights, for example. They don't have interline agreements with other airlines. And so it's a fascinating study of 40 plus years where every airline knew Southwest strategy, but almost none of them could compare with the profitability of Southwest because they would try to pick off pieces of it, but those little pieces didn't tend to make sense to their core customer. And many of them ended up in bankruptcy multiple times trying to copy Southwest.
How does one find out what your core customer's thinking and feeling?
Yeah, so one of the things that we find, just like with communication, having a simple message is really, really important. And so when we think about our core customers, it is not trying to be everything to everyone. It is working with the leadership team to get really clear, who is it that loves doing business with us? They're never beating us up on price because they are so grateful for the value that's being created for them. And start looking at them as a human, whether the company is a business to business, business to consumer, we're always selling to people. And so really understanding who is that decision maker. And what I like to see is almost a short paragraph on them. Their demographics, what's their educational background? What are their hopes and dreams and desires, right? Like really getting to know them as a person. And it's also a great way I can really see is the senior leadership team spending time with their customers? Because if they're not, it's a huge flag. This is not something you want to guess. It's incredibly risky. And yet if we spend time with them, they'll tell us. And we also want to layer the financials into it as well, because oftentimes I'll see a disconnect between the leadership team as they start talking through different potential people to kind of embody this core customer notion. It will be amazing, George, where they'll be passionately arguing for a core customer that when we pull the financials may not even be profitable. And so one of the really exciting parts of growing a mission-driven company is we get to deal with people and the tremendous opportunity to help and serve people, and also the challenge of working with people who have different hopes, different dreams, different gifts, et cetera. And so creating a diverse leadership team is both an incredible challenge, but also so rewarding.
You encourage the senior leadership team to spend time with customers, but I've heard from some leadership teams who don't want to spend time with the customers because all the customers do is complain.
Yeah. And so one of the metrics that we love, George, is called the Net Promoter Score. And one of the things we've seen working with so many high growth, successful companies is we've got to be creating value. If we're not creating value, eventually the game is going to be over. And so there's this incredible thing that customers will do, which is give us the gift of feedback. And we love a Net Promoter Score tool because it makes it really easy for customers to give feedback. Again, business to business, business to consumer, it doesn't matter. But how many times have we all gotten that kind of email link? Hey, we'd love your quick feedback. And half an hour later, the questions are still going, right? That's not a very sincere way to ask for feedback. Plus, are you really going to learn that much from the 50th or the 60th question being asked? No. The Net Promoter Score is brilliant because it's simple. How likely on a scale of 1 to 10, George, are you to recommend that company or that service? And what we find is people are either net promoters, you've had a great experience, you've just bought this new motorcycle, and the way the dealership treated you was phenomenal. You want to tell all of your friends so they can have that magical experience. Or you took your motorcycle in to get serviced and it was a disaster. They couldn't get anything done on time. They charged you 3 times more than they had promised. You want to tell all of your friends about this awful experience so that they don't suffer the same experience that you did. And what Net Promoter Score does is ask, how would you rank this product, business, or service on a scale of 1 to 10? If you're an 8 or above, you're a promoter. If you're a 6 or less, you're actually a detractor. You're going to actively tell all of your friends that something didn't go well. And by reaching out to our customers, they're going to be talking. So if we mess something up, we want to know so we can correct it. And this wonderful thing happens is if we acknowledge some kind of a shortcoming, oftentimes that service recovery can turn them into a net promoter. It's when we pretend these bad things aren't happening, when we try to sweep them under the rug and ignore them. In this age of social media, of Uber, where we all have ratings, right? We have ratings even as passengers on Uber. So we're either aware of what's going on and we're proactive around it, or we're going to ignore it at our peril.
And I like that question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your experience? How would you rate the service? That's a simple question, yet revealing.
And then you follow up with a why, an open-ended why. And that's all you need to know. If there's something off track, guess what? Pick up the phone and call them. It's literally that simple, but it just amazes me how few companies take the time to do that.
Yeah, that is simple. It's simple, but it's not something that most people leap to do. Call an angry customer? Are you kidding me? That's not my turn. Your turn. You call them.
But then you can be curious, and that's where you can also start getting a sense of how their needs changed. Because it might be you did something that you've been doing for the last 5 years, but all of a sudden it's just no longer working. That's so great to know.
Ethan, you are a pilot and you teach entrepreneurs to fly planes. And I believe you also use analogies between flying a plane and building a mission-driven business. Tell us about some of those.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to have been a pilot for over half of my life at this point in time. Started off in high school, benefited from amazing mentors when I was in high school that were running companies in the Boston area. And there's so many analogies when you think about flying an airplane, driving a car, riding a motorcycle. There's only a couple key indicators that you want to be looking at, right? So if you're driving your car down the highway and it's telling you totally random things, that could distract you. It's the same thing with leading a high growth company. We want to be really focused in keeping the senior team aligned on where we're going. And every leader needs to know, did they have a good day or a bad day? What is one or two KPIs that balance kind of leading indicators? How are things going to be in the future based on what we're doing today? And lagging indicators, things like our financials that are really important to know, but we can't change them. And so when I'm teaching someone how to fly, there's really only a couple of things that we're focusing on as we're flying the airplane. And that's so similar to running a company.
And it's a shame that we're so far apart. I'd love to spend time in learning how to fly with you. Ethan, when you work with companies and organizations, and do you help them find their vision, or do they come, they already have a vision and they come to you and they say, can you help us execute? Where do you fit in the process?
It's a great question. We do a lot of work helping to clarify, helping to stress test. We're blessed to work with incredibly smart, talented CEOs, George. And one of the things that becomes apparent in almost every kickoff we do with a client is the CEO has a vision and he or she has shared it numerous times with the leadership team. But that doesn't mean it's resonated. That doesn't mean they understand it. That doesn't mean they've internalized it. And so what we'll do at these offsites, either in person or virtual, is really stress test that vision and get the entire team aligned around exactly where do we want to be in 3 years? What is happening to our core customer? How are those needs changing? What's going on in our market? Where is this new white space that we can go after? And what's fascinating, George, is almost every time I'll have the CEO say, Ethan, we don't need to spend time on this. I've already told them, and truly, they have already told them many, many times, but it hasn't sunk in. And by doing these offsites every quarter, what happens every time is the CEO, typically after the first day, will be like, wow, I really did not realize how little this had actually sunk in. And so it is so, so key to kind of co-create that. And oftentimes, the senior team will have some great ideas that the CEO may have missed, may have stepped over, et cetera. But it's that critical time together. When you think about the senior team is not going to be together every minute, every second. They're typically guiding hundreds, if not thousands of people. For the senior team to be aligned, everything else follows out of that. And so as we're taking that time to really hash it out, really align the senior team, that cascades down into the rest of the organization. But if you have a senior team of 8, 9 people with very different visions of the future, far more interested in how can they get the largest budget, playing some kind of political game that we'll typically see in large organizations, that's going to cascade throughout the organization, create a lot of politics, and not be a very fun company to be part of.
You've used the phrase that they need a higher calling than profit. And you mentioned that your vision is that you love people. And does the higher calling, does the mission need to be altruistic?
So say more about kind of how you're defining being altruistic, George.
Does it have to be focused on the world, on the community versus self and organization?
Yeah. What we find tends to work really, really well is what does the CEO, what does the senior team care about? And for each of them, it can be something totally different. What tends not to work is if we're leading from just trying to satisfy our own ego. If a CEO comes to me and says, hey, Ethan, I want an IPO so I can buy an even bigger yacht than my neighbor. Can we help them grow an IPO? Absolutely. But we won't take them on as a client, George, because I have never seen that approach work. When we dedicate our lives to a challenge, to a problem greater than ourselves, A, it's amazing the company that we're going to build to solve that in collaboration with others, right? And even going back to the 1950s, there's a tremendous book on Hewlett-Packard called The HP Way. And I mean, look at how HP literally almost created Silicon Valley. And the founders talk about, you know, profit is a way to keep score. It's really important to be profitable. It provides the resources to keep growing. Growth sucks up cash. These business fundamentals are really important, but they used it as a way to see how well are we creating value? How well are we living that vision, right? Not a means to itself.
Profit is a way of keeping score. So, but if the game isn't fun, there's no point in playing it.
Yeah. And our egos, we can never satisfy. Someone's always going to have something more than we do.
A bigger boat, a bigger plane, a bigger motorcycle.
Yeah. And that's why we wrote Mentorship Engine, is just to give CEOs permission to do this, because we're seeing it work time and time again. It's not always taught by society. And one of the many examples where we see similarities between flying and running a company and attracting and developing and retaining great talent is we call it this notion of having a flight plan for life. And so as we're getting to know those leaders that we're privileged to lead, where do they want to go in life? And helping to steward these roles for them that are the intersection of what are the natural talents that they have Where do our people want to learn and grow? How do they define success? And where does the company want to go? And then as the leaders, we're looking for the intersection of all three. And what we find is if we can basically align that 80% plus of the time, tremendous results will follow. And our team members will have a lot of fun doing this.
Your book is called The Mentorship Engine. Why do you call mentorship an engine?
Yeah, it's truly, you know, we talk about cash flow a lot as being an engine for growth. But what we're seeing right now, George, it's all about people. The Wall Street Journal came out recently and said there's about 10 million unfilled jobs right now just in the US. We're seeing this challenge all over the world. And so if we don't figure out the people side, there is no way to grow. It's probably the greatest constraint right now that all great leaders are out there. It's probably the greatest constraint right now that all leaders are facing. How do we go out and identify, recruit, develop, and retain that best talent? And what we find too is, especially with the younger generations, they don't have a lot of patience for things that aren't real. And people can sense when you genuinely care about them or not. And so for the leaders that want to do this, this is not only the right thing to do, it is also an incredibly effective way to grow your company and make an impact on your local community, on your region, on your country, on your world. It really depends where you feel called to play.
And who's that book most for? Who would get the most from your book?
Yeah. So we wrote it for leaders, leaders of organizations, of for-profits, of nonprofits, been a part of many great nonprofits over the years, helped to start one a couple of years ago in the education space. And what we find is it doesn't matter what the tax structure is, great leaders can make almost anything happen. And so this is a framework that works for running any kind of an organization.
In the book, you referred that CEO could also stand for chief, or well, the CEO is also the chief vision officer, the chief relationship officer, and the chief mentorship officer. Talk a little bit about mentorship.
Yeah.
How can they create and leverage mentorship within their organization?
Yeah. The CEO, as the chief mentorship officer, is accountable for the culture of the organization. And everything we're talking about requires a CEO who cares. Patrick Lencioni talks about in one of his books, the foundation for trust is vulnerability. And so if you're going to be privileged to lead an organization where people feel safe and can be vulnerable, you can have these incredible outcomes around trust that ultimately will allow anything to be possible for their organization. But you've got to walk the talk. You've got to really have the best interest of your people in mind. And that's why we've created this framework to really look at, as you think about your team, as their leader, where do your people want to grow? Where do they want to learn and develop? What are the natural strengths and gifts and abilities that they have? And then where's your vision? Where's your collective vision? What is the intersection of all three? And when you solve for all three in a really genuine way, your people will be part of that higher calling. They're going to be really committed and really loyal. And that makes all of this possible and so much fun.
For people who might be looking for your book, they can find it at the website for the book, which is, and tell me if I got this right, thementorshipengine.com.
Correct. And it'll also be available on Amazon.
Perfect. And preparing to wrap up, Ethan, if you could sit down with a CEO who's got a vision and they're wondering and they think everyone gets it, but the reality is they don't, what one, two, or three pieces of advice might you give to that CEO?
Yeah, life is really short. It's probably kind of the first thing I'd frame that conversation with the CEO. And as the leader, you get to create anything you want. So create something you care about. Create something that really inspires you. There'll be times when you're going to get challenged in ways that you can't even imagine. And if you don't have that higher calling, if you don't have that mission that's really core to you, there may be times when you're tempted to give up or do something else. And so having that commitment is so, so key. But you don't have to do this alone. By building a really strong leadership team that shares your core values and is performing, it frees the CEO up to truly be the CEO. And it takes a lot of the stress and a lot of the risk away than if a leader is trying to solve everything himself or herself.
Powerful advice. My guest today is Ethan Martin, reminding you or asking you, what mountain do you want to climb?
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.